Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's UnitedHealthcare insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, UnitedHealthcare insurance plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about UnitedHealthcare insurance plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And I cannot believe it is only 7 or 8 days since the Rugby World Cup final.
Thank God it's over.
Oh,
thank God it's over. How good's the Premiership?
But what a week.
So much has happened in this last week.
I can't believe we were slumming it with international rugby for so long. Nothing happened. Nothing happened in the World Cup.
Those last two weekends as well, only two games in a week.
Pathetic.
Yeah. Awful.
It is shambolic. So, yes, we've got lots and lots to get through on this podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Make sure you hit subscribe in your feed because you may have already missed, for example, if you're not subscribed, you may have missed one of three podcasts that we gave you in the last 7 days, excluding this one, including a salary cap special straight after the news of the salary cap breach from Saracens. It's right there in your feed. Hit subscribe. Follow us at Twitter, at Rugby Podcast. He's at Jay Beardmore. That's JB.
Hello.
I'm Tim, at Cocker. And Phil, there.
Hello.
Lurking in your DMs somewhere. Right, I'll tell you what. Let's actually stick with the salary cap then. As we say, we're not going to go over all the old ground we covered on that salary cap special. But what was your view on the reaction to the salary cap from other club owners, other DORs, players?
Broadly okay with it. Very much understandable. Very much understandable. The only thing you would have to worry about is if some club owners came out and said, my word, this is terrible, only to be found out to be up to their own shenanigans, I'd be very, very cautious.
Well, I would have, yes. Anyone who has anything even that they might think could even potentially be interpreted as dodgy, I'm sure wouldn't have come out and made a statement.
Well, I mean, they're getting
they're
getting into the realms of politicians here, aren't they? We know some politicians are corrupt. And so if you're a politician, don't do anything wrong. Because even if you do something like, I don't know, claim for the removal of your wisteria on expenses, not crime of the century, you're automatically tarred as the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
So they've got to be beyond whites. So I'd be very careful. Maybe that does account for why so few clubs have come forward strongly. There's only really Tony Rowe, isn't there?
Not heard by the Harlequins boys, Rob Shaw and I think Kerr as well.
Yeah, right. In terms of club owners, it was Tony Rowe.
Tony Rowe was...
In terms of DORs, it was Rob Baxter.
By the way, we know Tony Rowe doesn't own the club before we say anything.
Yeah, Rob Baxter. I mean, admittedly, that's partly because they were the ones that people wanted to hear from because of their involvement in the finals against Saracens. And the other people that were asked were the coaches that were involved in the games over the weekend when they were asked. And a lot of them, like Dai Young, for example, just batted it straight back and said, we don't comment on other clubs.
Yeah, which is a perfectly reasonable way to deal with things, I think.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of the reaction from fans is understandable as well.
Yep.
Some having a bit of sport with it, like some of the Gloucester fans with the minus 26 fezzes. And the
should it be minus 22 by the end of the day?
Well, not sure they adjusted it. But it's good to get a bit of sport with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think, I can't remember who said it, but I do feel a little bit sorry for the Saracens fans who, if they're getting... Now, there's two sides to it.
Yeah.
They've had the benefit of the last few years of amazing teams, amazing performances. They should be able to take some banter. The banter shouldn't step over the line because they've had nothing to do with it.
This is where I think you're right, Phil. In fact, I 100% back, I think, what you're saying, which is, it's about proportionality now, isn't it? Like, they've done something wrong, that's fine.
Sorry, yeah.
Well, it's not fine, but they'll get punished through it that way. And that, in terms of Saracens and their fans, you know, by all means, get into them. But it shouldn't go any... And there's no suggestion that it would go, go any further.
And they should expect and take a little bit of banter.
Yeah. Yes.
And if it's done in, you know... It should never cross a line. We know what the line is, but at a rugby ground, there should be stick given to fans for all manner of reasons.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, and that's part of it.
Strangely enough, I did the pre-match interviews at Sale when the first accusations came out in the Daily Mail. And the opening was something like, welcome AJ McGinty. If he was a Saracens player, he'd already be a multi-millionaire property company owner. Something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically where you're aiming at, but nothing more. I don't think anything more has happened.
Can I just add a group of people that I have real massive sympathy for? Saracens players as well.
Yeah.
Mm. Even the players that have medals, because you cannot stop the fact that they gave everything and grafted and worked so damn hard, and now, obviously there was an unfair advantage, and I'm not trying to negate that. But the hard work that they sacrificed, just like every other team, just like Exeter players might feel aggrieved, or Gloucester players might feel aggrieved, Harlequins, whatever, Saracens players will feel aggrieved because they're going to look at those medals that they earn in a very, very different light.
That. So Harlequins, I think John Kingston said something really, really profound. I guess it's profound. When he mentioned about Jordan Turner Hall, he said they had a load of boys up for renegotiation. Jordan Turner Hall, Ugo, and Dave Strettle. And the first guys to accept the deals got the deals. Simple as that. Now
Strettle left and went to Saracens.
Yeah. Oh dear. Now the reason I mention that is because then I can see why players would be annoyed and why those other players did have an unfair advantage, because if you're with a group of players and you feel like you're in a winning team but they can't afford to keep you there, then that makes a real big difference. And those Saracens boys were afforded the chance to stay in that winning team and evolve that team to what it eventually became.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where do the players have anything to
No, they don't have anything to answer for.
I think they do.
The players?
Yeah, I think, well,
the players.
So I've been thinking about this quite a lot. And in this instance, it's very hard to pin it on the players, but I think in the future, the players should carry some of the can for it, not just the owners. And I think what there should be two separate mechanisms. One should be the club reports exactly what the remuneration of is of all the players.
Yeah, well, we're going over ground from our midweek podcast.
The players should report separately to Premier Rugby what they believe their remuneration is and how it's broken down. And then if a salary cap breach occurs, they can say, well, you declared all this stuff to us, but you didn't declare that house. You're in this just as much as them.
They're employees of the club. So they're on PAYE. You don't need to do that.
Well, PAYE and other things, of course. Well, so they're not on PAYE. If they're on PAYE...
No. Yeah. But the players all acted in good faith that was fine. It's outside their PAYE income.
I'm certain the players should have at least asked, you are reporting this, or it's either you are reporting this, Mr. Ray, aren't you? Yes, I am. Or they say, this is outside the salary cap, isn't it, Mr. Ray?
Yes,
and he says,
it is.
Yes, it is.
So the other thing as well is Chris Ashton said something. Was it Chris Ashton? Who was it? Someone said something on TV. I'm going to say Chris Ashton. It might not be. That we get advice, the agent talk. Yeah, it was, no one really knows, we go to the agents talk, blah, blah, blah. So, well, okay, so that's great. I assume you'll be suing your agent for bad advice then, because, someone, it's all very well having plausible deniability, but ultimately...
Well, that is the only additional thing that came out this week in terms of the reaction that for one, Saracens have said they are going to ask for the review or appeal, as they're calling it, but it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, which is interesting.
And secondly, there is the spectre, the potential that there could be some recovery of losses. There could be some civil cases.
From Exeter?
From other clubs.
From Exeter, other clubs, other players, who knows? So this could rumble on. But like I said, I direct you to the salary cap special and then...
Well, I've had some thoughts post that, but actually they're probably a little bit too complicated to get into in this section.
There's just one thing I would like to say, which we spoke last week about the intent, and Saracens, in their statement, they said that Premier Rugby, they were glad Premier Rugby acknowledged it was not deliberate.
Okay.
Then Nigel Ray came out and made his statement, and he said that Premier Rugby had said,
"I'm really glad to see Premier Rugby have agreed that it was not deliberate."
But
so you mean it's not fraudulent.
So there's two things to this, which is quite interesting. Yeah. So there are two. I've been speaking to a couple of friends who know this kind of legal wrangling, and their view is, so the panel would never, or very rarely, determine intent, partly because the Premier Rugby salary cap rules and regulations don't require determining of intent.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no point. You would be trying to prove an unnecessarily high standard.
Like a shoulder to the chin for a red card.
Exactly. And without determining intent, you already get them to a £5 million fine and the maximum penalty. So why would you bother when that becomes dubious? Mm. Now, there's two ways of saying it. Now, the first way they said it was they said they acknowledge it did not deliberately do it. Now, it might just be word games, but it's kind of saying that the panel didn't say anything towards it. Not that they explicitly said
it wasn't. Now, we know this wasn't deliberate, but...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rather than they just didn't say it.
They just didn't say it. Now, Nigel Ray's statement was...
I want to talk about this.
The panel said that it was not deliberate. Now, here's where it gets a bit conspiratorial. What he actually said was, the panel said it was not deliberate. He actually said twice.
Oh,
do you think he was saying it for emphasis?
You'll double
do you think
negative?
He was doing it for emphasis? Well, like, it was not, I repeat, not.
Yeah, that was on my first listening. But then, with my cynical conspiratorial head on, I was thinking, hang on.
Has he just given himself an applause and an out?
Yeah, has he tried to say... So, but in that literal wording, it would mean they had said it was deliberate, so that surely can't be
well,
right.
Well, actually, Premier Rugby have, or whoever, the arbitration panel, whoever was overseeing this, that it's a sliding scale of intentional... And then reckless, and then blah, blah, blah. And they came in as reckless, which was the third worst out of four.
Well
then.
I think that was right.
Which was, that was Ali Eakin tweeted that. Now, I've not actually seen the Premier Rugby statement on that, but I will take Ali's, he's obviously very connected. There was a comparison, I've seen it in a couple of places actually, that said, it's like showing off that you only committed manslaughter, not murder. It's like bragging. I was just totally reckless and killed that woman.
Well, whilst we're on the statement then, anyone notice the emphasis on salary? That got me. Nigel Ray kept on referring to salary. I thought, well, he's not stupid enough to know or to think that other benefits don't count towards salary as such. Okay, no, that is strictly not true. There is salary, but we all know that other benefits contribute to your taxable pay.
So
right?
So
salary. That made me think, well, if he knows about taxable benefits, which obviously he does.
He does. But
obviously, what on earth is he referring to?
Well.
And the only thing I could think of was gifts. So is he implying that he gave gifts to players, because that wouldn't be salary? And then that is a whole new world of pain, because there is actually a precedent for this. Milan Mandarić and Harry Redknapp. Where it turned out, it was a gift.
We will,
from the HMRC's perspective.
But hang on a minute, he didn't have a salary cap case to fight.
Yes.
We will see if it could be. This is one potential, just to round this off. I wonder if, because they haven't lodged the appeal or review yet, it could be PR management internally. It could just be trying to keep...
Who gives these clubs PR management? Because they're bloody awful.
No. As in, I mean, it's the messaging to the club itself. Because keep the players involved, keep the team ethos, keep everyone together.
I think it's a bit of a godsend for Saracens, personally. Where else could they have gone? You know, dominating things over and over again. It was too easy for them anyway. Yeah. And now they've got a real sort of bugbear. They've got something which will get them motivated. They just had a wonderful win over Gloucester. Yeah. You know, a team led by Manu Vunipola battering a team led by all-star Danny Cipriani, who, by the way, I love. I think he's an amazing player. And he got beaten by a 19-year-old Flyhoff. Mm. I mean, you know.
One final thing on the salary cap. What did you make of the equivalence with Bloodgate?
Two things.
Because there were some very vocal Quins. Now, Quins and Saracens are rivals. And I think the rivalry works more in the Quins to Saracens direction than the Saracens to Quins direction.
Yeah, Saracens don't realise that Quins are there.
No. but Quins are always fired up for the Saracens game. They treat it as a massive rivalry, much more so than Saracens treat it as a rivalry.
It's like the Cleveland Browns think that the Pittsburgh Steelers are their rivals, and they're really not, because Pittsburgh don't care. That's how I look at it. There's two things here. Okay, so first of all, Bloodgate, I don't think you can make... I don't think it's fair to pin Bloodgate on Quinn's players now. So when they say, we think it's unfair because this, that, and that, this, that, and the other, and so on, and so on, goes, hang on a minute, you had Bloodgate, keep your mouth shut kind of thing. Because it was 10 years ago, and, you know, everyone involved then has since left. Probably, I'm guessing there's no players.
Robshaw.
Robshaw.
Is there Robshaw?
Kerr was probably there.
They'll have been there 10 years ago.
Yeah, Kerr, Robshaw, but not Brown. Many. So that's...
Not many, you're right. But there's a few of the senior guys.
The second part is it comparable as an offence? I think it is, really, because that was a huge scandal.
Conscious cheating.
But yeah, it was worse.
But that conscious cheating by Quins was done by players and coaching staff.
And medical staff.
And medical staff.
Yeah, it was worse.
Rather than... So, in terms of it was... the players are more culpable for what happened with Quins than Saracens players.
Here's what I don't like about it, okay? It's all about the motives. So, you can see the salary cap one as being as benign as being late on your tax return, if you believe the administrative error. And at worst, it's kind of like fiddling your taxes. And again, very, very bad. You should be punished, so on and so forth. The Quins incident, the motives behind that, to me, that is akin to stealing off an old lady. You know, you're actively cheating there and then, trying to influence the results. Now, the overall impact on rugby is far greater from what Nigel Ray's done. So he's influenced potentially half a decade's worth of results. So it's far, far worse. Whereas Quins, I think, failed to influence
the
game.
They didn't win the game that they cheated.
They gave themselves a chance to win a game that they lost.
In terms of the nastiness, the Quins and Bloodgate thing is far worse. But I also know that is the Quins we have today is not the same Quins we had 10 years ago.
Of course. But I think it's understandable that... and, you know, I tweeted out a bit of a jokey tweet about it. Which finished with the line "Our mouths bleed for you," as it just kind of a bit sardonic, and it was just meant to be a joke. But quite a lot of Quins fans did not like that.
It touched a nerve, Tim.
And you have to be able to accept if you're a Quins fan or a player that was around then. You could, just like we're saying, Saracens fans, accept you're going to get a bit of stick. It's fine.
I imagine the Germans feel the same way about the war. You know, it was a long time ago. It's over. Don't mention it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But so, I kind of go with that one.
it's a perfectly fine comparison in terms of scandals. I just don't think it's a fair thing to pin on this Quins organisation, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I'd probably agree with that, although I'm not sure just the level of nastiness.
Well, I can kind of see the
cutting the players, obviously, is a pretty brutal thing.
If you steal from bank accounts, right, through some card fraud or whatnot, it's pretty awful. And that's sort of the level of cheating going on at Saracens. It's not good. But if you smash down someone's door in order to rob their house and come away with nothing, the smashing down of the door, in my mind, is far more direct and far more nasty.
Yeah, it is the other point that you made about the scale.
The scale is enormous.
So both were premeditated, which means it's a fair comparison. It's fair to call them in. But the Quins gave them one opportunity, that we are aware of, one opportunity to win one game.
Yeah.
Whereas Saracens was a long-term, like it is, they are trying to win every game over, you said, it could be a half a dozen year period or longer.
Yeah.
that's why it just... The Saracen things for me is...
Yeah,
worse.
The magnitude of it is almost...
Of course it is.
It's huge.
It's incomparable, the magnitude difference.
That is not up for debate, but anyone whose club has behaved in that way should just expect that a bit of banter will fly your direction as well, and that's and as it should.
Do you not think there should be an amnesty now? There should be like
a banter amnesty.
Yeah. Everyone come clean. Come clean.
Oh, everyone come clean.
That's what
supposedly happened 5 years ago.
Let's do it again, but properly this time, and put in some different rules.
Yeah.
And last thing I would say before we talk about the so much rugby, and Wolfpack, of course. I forgot what I was going to say, so it doesn't. Oh yeah, if you're calling for Saracens to be relegated, I completely understand why you'd want that. I can also completely understand why you'd want the stripping of the titles. But just bear in mind that you are calling for rules to be enforced, rules that everyone agreed to. And if those rules don't state that, you can't then go and add additional rules.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I'd add.
I definitely agree with that. And that is why the panel's decision is what it is, following the regulations.
And if they want to change the rules...
Please feel free.
It would have to be voted.
You're the owners. Go and do it.
Yeah. Go and do it. I think it makes sense to start with Saracen's fantastic win at King's Home.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. I really fancied Gloucester for this one. Yeah.
I mean, if you were just, obviously it's a squad effort and everything, but if you were just comparing salaries of the Saracens 15 and the Gloucester 15, there's no way Saracens would be anywhere near Gloucester, surely.
Yeah.
The tragedy of Saracens is most of what they've done, they could have done without breaking the cap, I'm sure of it.
Because there is a lot behind that club in terms of way they go to work.
Yeah, there's so much they've done which never involved you having to break the cap. Mm. And they, you know, they basically beat Gloucester with a bunch of kids and some internationals.
Yeah, a 19-year-old pulling the strings at 10, completely outshining a guy that, go back 6 months...
6 weeks?
Go back 3 months. Everyone was clamouring for him to be England's number 10 at a World Cup.
Yep.
Guilty.
And I've always called for Manu Vinopola to be England's number 10.
The greatest player of a generation.
Yeah. What's happened to Cipriani? Because it's interesting, Johan Ackerman after the game was asked, is he fit? He went, yeah, he was absolutely fit. Yeah. 100% fit. We made the changes based on tactics, not fitness. Mm.
He was. They did repeatedly reference that he was struggling with a calf in comms, not Ackerman.
Yeah.
He did. There was a few times where Saracens tried to run a move, tried to have the Cipriani to Atkins round the back of Harris to give Cipriani that space with then Marshall, Woodward, Thorley, all the options available to him with time. And it just never worked. Now, part of that definitely can be attributable to the Saracens' defence. And I can't remember who was on comms that day. But
Ali.
Paul
Grayson?
It might have been Paul Grayson, actually. Who was talking about the Saracens' defence not biting in and not committing. And just watching, fine, Atkinson, Cipriani, you do your thing. We'll hold, drift. And then when you've picked your option... we'll go and smash them. And Saracen's defence read it perfectly and did that with aplomb.
Mm. But a theme of the season is that Gloucester and Exeter are just not fluent. And two of the most fluent, no, two of the most fluent attacking sides last year are not fluent at all.
Not many teams are, to be fair. I mean, you say Northampton are.
Have been until this point.
Sale Sharks, certainly not fluent yet. No. Wasps are certainly not fluent yet.
No, Quinns, definitely not.
Yeah, it's...
Maybe Bristol and Worcester are Bristol and Worcester and Northampton, two of the most relatively fluent compared to...
Considering how much time they've had together and the Premiership Cup, you would be expecting better, really.
Well, it's just, I think it's going to be an interesting season, and I think this is going to be one, clearly, this is going to be one where... the final couple of months is everything, and almost what the more weeks we go through, the more we're going to look back and go, this first month meant absolutely nothing.
Sorry, if everyone's if everyone's beating everyone else, does that mean the standard for relegation becomes higher? It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because there's going to be no basement team.
Yeah.
Which means it's much more likely that Saracens get relegated.
Yes, because everyone else is picking up points. So yeah. if everyone else picks up 8 of the 12 wins, then the normal relegated team is somewhere in the mid-20s. Newcastle were a bit of an anomaly last year on 31. The next highest team after Saracens could be on, if everyone wins 8 out of their, or the least wins is 8, you could be on 40 to 45 points.
Imagine getting relegated to 40 points.
Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen, because there's been some teams that are not looking particularly good. But I think you're right, Tim, that this first month is just going to be where everyone's beating everyone.
Well, I think we'll look back at whoever the champions are, and they're probably going to have gone, we'll probably look back at it and go, oh, they had a really bad start to the season.
Yeah.
I think that's probably how it's going to be, because...
Well, everyone's been defeated at least once. So
at least once,
almost
yeah.
Almost by definition, everyone's had a bad start, because the good teams have already lost. So Saracens have already lost. Exeter have lost 2, is it?
Exeter have lost two.
So if they're champions, they've had a terrible start.
And I think
lost two.
It demonstrates the competitiveness of the league, which is its
greatest asset.
Yeah,
the irony of the salary cap argument, the reason they should be fined, is because look what it does.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's better than the World Cup.
Well, part of that is this kind of the point is, how much of this is because all the teams are better and more even, and how much of it is that there are some teams that just aren't performing yet?
Both, I think.
Bit of both. Losing international players. I know a few of them were back previously and a few back again this weekend. But losing the international players is a great leveller. Because historically the better teams have more international players. You take them out, you're more reliant on your younger guys, your less experienced guys. And teams like Worcester, say, who lose virtually no one, are going to be performing above their normal station. So.
Yeah. Yeah, because it is so even. If you are off your game even slightly, you get a beatdown,
and even for a short period of time.
Yeah.
So Exeter in that game today, the Exeter Bristol game, Exeter looked pretty good. Yeah,
they were cruising.
Pretty good for the whole of the first half, and it takes 20 minutes of poor performance, not getting the points on the board, and then 20 minutes of poor performance, and very good reaction by Bristol, who are a dangerous team.
They are mega, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, that tells me that I think they will be a top four team, because if you can pull that sort of result back, it wasn't...
The caveat being, exactly for the same reason, for we'll look back and go, like Exeter might end up being champions, and we'll go, oh, they just had a... You can look at them now.
Yeah.
That's what happens in a World Cup year. You get more fluent. Exactly the same caveat in reverse.
Yeah.
Don't judge Bristol as a top four team because they went to Sandy Park and won.
Yeah, but...
But I know what you're saying.
The reason I like it was not because they beat Exeter in a normal manner, like staying in the fight and, you know, building a lead or whatnot. They came back from basically nothing.
It was 17-0.
And the balls
They came back
well.
From nothing.
Sorry, are we allowed to talk about this game? Are we talking about the last game?
No. We can jump around. Yeah, it's fine.
So the balls of the Bristol play. I mean, I love this so much. I love the sort of back-yourself culture that they have. 19-year-old hooker. And they dummy middle. They dummy near the back. Then they go up at the back, get the ball, drive over.
Having taken off Piatow and put on a 18-year-old.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Lloyd.
The million. I wonder if there's been a substitution in the Premiership this week which has had that
right, a differential.
Of pay.
Yeah.
The pay difference. That is a stat.
Well, it's probably nearly £1 million pay differential.
Yeah. Well, yes.
Yeah. £970,000 of pay differential.
Yeah, actually, if anyone from BT Sports listening, that's a stat that I want. When the subs come on, the pay differential stats.
Oh, but they could only be rumoured, couldn't it?
Yeah.
The rumoured alleged pay differential.
Alleged pay differential.
I did love that finish, because it's out exiting Exeter as well. To back yourselves to hit the line out. And they were 10 yards out as well. To hit the line out.
But on the
yards.
Third penalty, what? That is so un-Exeter.
And it was very Bristol, actually. So, watching this Bristol game, I was like, yeah, so Bristol are still disciplined in what they're doing, i.e. their wide shape is still good. In that sense, the discipline's great. But the stupid penalties they were giving away, it was just moronic. And then, in the end, their wide discipline and all the shape and whatnot eventually paid dividends. And it was Exeter giving away stupid penalties.
Yeah.
And like you say, that last one, that last line-out was so enormously stupid.
And even the commentators, I think Lawrence Delalle was on, and he went, well, they won't compete for this one then, because they'll just want to get in a pushing position and set. Both Exeter jumpers went up. Bristol got a massive march on.
Yeah. On the penalties, So let's just jump quickly back to the Saracens game, Saracens-Gloucester, because there was a period in the second half where Gloucester had a load, had 7 or 8 penalties.
I was just about to say one theme of the weekend is the number of penalties given away without a card. Is that kind of where you're going? Because I thought Bristol, oh, God, they should have had a yellow card because they was just pen, nothing.
Yeah.
And it was the same in the Gloucester-Saracens game.
Saracens-Gloucester, that period. And Delalio was going mental.
He was.
And it was
He was vexed. He was absolutely right.
Craig Maxwell Keys should have... So he gave a team warning after it was either penalty 7 or penalty 8 in a 10-minute period in Saracens 22, which was ridiculous.
Yeah.
That... It actually... So Saracens, I think they were very smart because they knew they could keep infringing until they got that team warning. As soon as they got that team warning, they were then whiter than white, which actually then led to the try. But in doing so, they'd eaten up a good 15 minutes of the match.
What about this? What about if every fourth penalty is automatically a yellow card regardless? I quite like that idea. These penalties are for stupid stuff. So you've either got to play cleanly, but even better, if a team has committed no penalty offences towards the end of the half and they're defending a narrow lead or towards the end of the game, they've basically got 3 penalties in the bag to do whatever they want.
Or the ref could just say, like a rugby league, have the 6 tackles. The ref says, that's your 5, next one to the bin, whatever it is.
Next one to the bin. People would stop messing around pretty quickly.
And I think you'd then have tactics, like people would just do...
First pen, high shot on the fly half.
Box kicks and quick jump in the air in front of someone.
Bring on the player with a massive head.
Bring on the 3 feet players. 3 foot tall players. Give them the ball. Give Harry Thacker the ball.
Exactly. I like that law. Look at that. We've got pay differential law coming in. We are literally reinventing the game.
But you are right. It's a theme across the weekend. It was 100% in that Saracens game. And I was watching the Bristol-Exeter game thinking, how have Bristol avoided getting a yellow card when they were repeatedly infringing? And I think there was, we can get into there was the same. If you think all the penalties were justified in the Wasps Sale game, when Wasps had about 8 penalties in a row in a 10-minute period and there was no yellow card, same thing goes. I mean, in that particular case, I thought quite a few of the Wasps penalties were very, very harshly dealt out. But a theme to watch, referees not giving yellow cards for repeated infringements by teams. And I think a yellow card will keep people honest and create a better spectacle, because the quality of rugby, they've been enthralling games, tight, tense, but they haven't been great quality, and I think this is part of it.
I agree with that point. I know, JB, you love the arm wrestle.
I do love the arm
wrestle. The repeated scrums. And I like it to a point, but I like the delicious high-sugar treats.
Like more Tom Marshall finishes like that. Yeah. Oh, my word.
It's okay.
It's nothing like 5 repeated scrums.
I would say this about scrum penalties. I think scrum penalties are very valuable. And I have no problem with scrum penalties being handed out, because it is fairly quick, isn't it? Scrum penalty, and then away you go.
Although, can I just ask referees, when there's a scrum penalty, can you just say penalty, advantage, and allow the free play to happen? Because a lot of them are just blowing it up straight before.
So if it goes
when the scrum half could get the ball away.
Yes. Well, was that not a law at one point, or some semi-law, which was if the ball is playable but an offence has occurred, you always choose to play the ball over the offence. I'm sure they did something like that. If it collapses or something but it's playable, you can play on.
It seems to be more referees' discretion.
Yeah, and I'm kind of with you there. Like, do it.
There is two sides to that for me. One, if it's just a collapse, definitely do that. If there is clear someone folding in or whatever, if there's a clear infringement that leads to the collapse, give the penalty.
Can I just clarify?
Or give the advantage.
What you want? Do you want to say that if the ball is playable, don't give the scrum pen, let them play, or make sure it's an advantage and don't blow up?
Make sure it's an advantage and don't blow up.
When it's a clear penalty, yes, I'm with that, definitely. Yeah.
It's just such a hard thing to officiate. So
it is.
You know, it is. It's a nightmare.
But on the scrum, that's the other theme for the weekend. Is and following on from the World Cup final, you can't have a scrum, you can't win. And I love that is still the case in Northampton Saints. I mean, it absolutely ruined my fantasy rugby draft because I've got the Northampton Saints front row who got me minus 20 points for two yellow cards and just getting battered.
I wonder if they believed their own hype a little bit too much, Northampton. Just tried to play a little bit too much, or a little bit loose.
How are Northampton suddenly a bad scrummaging side? I don't understand.
Well, they shouldn't be, should they? It should be amazing.
No, paying tribute to their fallen leader, Dylan Hartley. Just all of the, as a sign of respect.
We all give away a penalty for Dylan.
Yeah, all give yellow carded. Yeah. All trying to get yellow carded for Dylan.
Fair play. I mean, that's a real team ethic, isn't it? That's a culture.
That is culture. You can't teach that.
No.
It's culture.
I heard a little Dylan Hartley fact, actually, which I quite liked.
Okay.
I think it's someone quite close to Dylan changed his Wikipedia entry so that it said 96 caps for England, not 97. And so that they have a little chuckle, because they know every time someone's just gone to Wikipedia, they say, oh, England's hooker, England's most capped hooker with 96 caps.
Way.
It's just a little thing for them. They go, ah, you've been on Wikipedia. You don't know. It's 97.
97?
And I only know that because I went on to TalkSport to talk about Dylan Hartley, and I mentioned, you know, got to remember, this guy's had 97 caps. And one of the producers outside said, oh, I spoke to Dylan Hartley, you know, he changed it, but you obviously know his stuff.
There you go.
So there you go. So if you ever work with him or meet him or whatever, or have to introduce him somewhere, it doesn't matter. He's a nice guy.
Well, I've got a shirt.
But you're right. Northampton are just channeling that Dylan Hartley. Let's have some discipline issues.
Yeah. I have done talk sport before, and last time I did talk sport, do you want to know what my prediction was? Leon to surprise people in the European Cup.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, last season.
It did surprise people.
And thank God I used the word surprise people, because technically I was right. But I don't think they'll ever.
When they were the first team not to get a single point.
Yeah, the first
the
team. That was a surprise.
That was genuine. I was shocked.
Surprising.
Are they still top of the top 40?
Yeah, they are smashing it, and they won again this weekend.
Absolutely killing it.
Yep.
Should we touch on the Bath Northampton game?
Yes.
Because Bath, I was pleasantly surprised with what I saw from Bath. So from their earlier games this season, there was no question that they were wanting to front up, and they've got some talented boys in the pack. Mm. And they did front up in their earlier games. What would have worried me if I was a Bath fan was their seeming total inability to distribute the ball and use the talent they had out wide. And actually in this game, they did that. Not huge amounts, not over. They didn't try and out Northampton, out Chris Boyd Northampton, but they showed some nice touches at the right times. And the build up for the Chudley try was exactly that. Nice flowing move, nice offloading, keeping the ball alive, and you finish it off with a 20 yard snipe from the scrum half.
But I think we saw in the Rugby World Cup final that the psychology of the scrum, and I think, we've all played to mm-hmm. various levels, and it doesn't matter what level it is, the psychological effect it has.
No scrum.
Not even the tangible effect it has on territory from penalty kicks or
it's huge.
It's but the psychological impact it has, and the way it pumps your tyres up.
Oh, well, the way you worry to make you don't want to make any
you
mistakes.
You don't want to make any mistakes. You worry, you start. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's massive, and so clearly, I think Bath felt confident and they're going to have a big gnarly pack.
I thought Will Stewart looked very good.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, is he in? Is it Wasps?
Wasps
somewhere?
Yeah.
Wasps. Yeah, so, I mean, obviously he's got Premiership experience before, but you wouldn't say, ooh, Will Stewart, there's a match winner. Yeah.
What was the point? You wouldn't say Northampton, that front row, what's a bit of a worry? I can't understand it.
Styles make matchups.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a very good win, and it will allow Bath fans to breathe a bit easier this season, I think.
But, do you know, when you look at Bath, as I was today, you look at their back line, how many years in the past would you have to go before you get to a Welsh team which would consider playing Priestland, Roberts and Brew? I mean, it feels
the three
like
of them together.
About 7-8 years ago?
I was going to say even a bit longer, potentially.
I mean, I'm sure they would have. I mean, they are broadly the same age, right? I wouldn't be surprised if they've played a Welsh game together. How long ago was it since they were top-class internationals? And you might be starting to get to the nub of Bath's problems then.
Well, that might be the most impressive thing about Bath's performance was Brew got sent off after 48 minutes.
Yeah.
Did they played the last 30 minutes.
Card.
Did what, sorry?
Do you think it was a red card? Justified red card?
I think it was. I think I wouldn't have hated it being downgraded because he had such a, it was the smallest fraction of a second for him to make any decision. With that said, he still did lead with the elbow and made contact with each
if the guy stays up on his feet.
Well, so
it's not a red card, is it?
Yeah, if he stays up on his feet, and also it's and it's it's exactly the same as what we were talking about with the salary cap. You kind of I would prefer intent to be part of the conversation, but it can't be.
Yeah,
it can be. It just isn't.
No, it can be. It just isn't. But I don't. I think with Paolo Adogwu and with Aled Brew, they look really bad. But I doubt either player was thinking, "I'm going to clock this guy."
No.
Particularly the Brew one. I mean, the Brew one just looked like he was trying to get a hand off it. It was just wrong timing and yada 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 yada. Red card. Yellow card.
It can
be
instinctive. It could even be an instinctive move, like a defensive move.
To protect yourself.
Almost.
Yeah.
Or maybe he went for a really, really sharp elbow and failed, actually.
Like, I mean, like, for example, let's just...
elbow straight into the eye socket.
Yeah. Let's just go with... Like, just play the Paolo Adogwu one a second. Oh, I've got to listen to the dickhead line now. Yeah. That's the best bit. Yeah. Young dickhead. Campbell.
Only a yellow for that.
You ballers dead, Campbell.
Campbell.
You dickhead.
Amazing.
But, so I'm inclined to think both Aled Brew and Paolo Adogwu were deserved red cards, but I think they were both defensive moves, if anything.
Yeah.
I don't like the chat that was, oh, look at him trying to kick the guy in the head.
The Paolo Adogwu one particularly annoyed me.
Yeah, me too, actually. Yeah.
I don't mind saying, I've met Paolo Adogwu on multiple occasions. One of the nicest guys. I mean, it wasn't just people at home who might have thought, oh, yeah, that was defensive, or that wasn't, you know, that didn't look intentional. Pretty much everyone at Sale Sharks thought it was not intentional. Everyone was shrugging their shoulders, like, oh, well, that's not very Paolo-like, because it's not very Paolo-like. So, there was something particularly on Twitter which annoyed me, which is like four stills of Adogwu doing what he did. Trying to encapsulate a whole player's career in four stills, you know, go to football. It's just not the case. It was unfortunate. It was a red card dealt with, but it was completely out of character. He'll be as disappointed with himself as anyone will be. Yeah. So that's where I stand on that.
And on that, so I'm not sure it was a red card.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's a red
because,
card.
And both, I'm certainly had no intent. Intent's irrelevant. To make contact with the head. The laws on this are grey in my mind. So I went and had a look at the...
Of course you did.
...the guidance on challenging players in the air. And so... the red card... So it gives a red card position. The red card position is it's not a fair challenge with no contest.
Okay.
Whilst being a reckless or deliberate foul play... And the player lands in a dangerous position is the way it's written, but the player receives a dangerous hit. Now, so on that wording, I guess it could be interpreted. The problem I have is there are videos accompanying the guidance for this. Every single one of those videos is where the foul play is from the person who is not in a position to catch the ball.
Yeah.
Paolo Adogwu was the player in position to catch the ball. There is no, from the interpretation of the videos, there is no guidance in world rugby.
On it, you'd say the defensive player or the player making the challenge shouldn't be touching him full stop.
There's an argument to say...
Penalty, Adogwu.
Rohan Jansi van Rensburg, you've made contact with the player in the air.
And you've caused damage.
To yourself.
Yeah.
There's an argument to say it should be penalty only. Penalty in favour of Wasps.
Yes, I can see that. The problem is with this is rugby is no longer refed kind of on an intent basis, but more on an image basis.
Yes.
So the image for instance, Aled Brew was a forearm to the face. Well, that's dangerous. It's the image that matters now. So run it through that sort of processor and say, what does a stud to a chin look like? Now, on that basis, it's like the UFC mantra, which is don't leave it in the hands of the judges. As soon as you put some studs in someone's face, it doesn't matter really what the laws say, even though that's exactly what should matter. It's a case you put it in the referee's hands. Ooh. And now the referee is on TV. He's watching the big screen in slow motion of a guy kicking another man in the face. What is he going to do?
And I will be very interested to see and read the hearing report for this.
Yeah. He won't get cited, though, will he?
See where they get to. Well,
it's mandatory,
card.
Isn't it? It'll have to be.
So, interestingly, I was sitting next to the citing commissioner at Seal. And when that red card was given, there's some laughs and jokes around the area, not by citing commissioner himself, but saying, oh, that saves you some work, because then you don't have to watch it, do you? Because it's already been dealt with by red.
Been dealt with on the field.
So it's not a citing issue.
Is there not a disciplinary?
There's still a disciplinary hearing for any red card. For any red card.
Yeah.
Ah, right, okay. So right, he wouldn't need to go through it because he would need to cite it.
No. Yeah, but it goes straight to disciplinary.
So I'm kind of with you, Phil, and it goes back. We're going over old ground, so I won't need to go there. And much as you've sort of touched on, I would like intent to be part of the whole
image. Image is the process.
I'd like it to be part of it because you, we're sort of it leads to a situation where people come away assuming that Alid Brew has made a small decision to forearm smash someone in the face, and that's the language that people on Twitter and from whatever
the forearm smashed him. Forearm smash,
and that Paolo Dogu will have deliberately extended his leg to kick Van Rensburg in the face.
Look, we know it's not.
So, yeah, I mean, that interpretation of it would suggest that Paolo Dogu is so comfortable on the high ball that he can catch it, and in the split second after securing the ball, make the decision to extend his leg to...
Incredible motor and balance skills by Paolo Dogu. Yeah, and flexibility. You look at the size of his thighs, you do not expect a man of that size.
there is an argument in both of those red cards. Yeah, there is an argument in both of those red cards that they have been red carded for evolution. Because humans, we've evolved to where we are and have the characteristics, and that fight or flight psychosomatic response, which is like what's the word when it's involuntary?
Yes,
involuntary subconscious defensive responses in order to stay. That's why we are still alive on Earth, because our forefathers and our ancestors have done it, and that's just what happened, and they got red carded for
it. Unlucky. Paolo Dogu didn't have me running at him, or you, or Phil. He had Johan Janzi von Rensburg, who is a
Johan Janzi von Rensburg right now.
Oh my God, he's frightening.
Back to his best.
He doesn't look like that. Those pictures we talked about him last year when he was on that corporate.
Yes, he's not like that anymore. That's
yeah,
for sure.
He's got his mojo.
Which leads us nicely to Sale Wasps, which a game I was in attendance for. I'll say this, if you are at a loose end in the Northwest on a Friday night or a Saturday afternoon, you should go on Sale. It is such a good game day now. Not just doing PR, it really, really is. No? Do you disagree?
I
think going to any Premiership game is a great afternoon.
I agree with you. The problem is
the evolution from where it was 3 years ago to where it is now.
Yeah.
It is right in day.
What was the attendance?
I don't know. I didn't count them, but I can tell you this.
More than you can count on one hand.
Yeah, far more. And to a large degree, I have considered the attendance, which is I don't know what more they can do. The fan experience gets better and better every year, and if it carries on like this,
what they need to do is go back in time and do it differently. That's the only thing they can do now, is go back in time and manage the move to the AJ Bell Stadium.
Well, manage the move
totally
away from,
differently.
Manage the move away from Edgeley Park. Hayward Road, I'd say. I mean,
Edgeley Park had. I was the.
Edgeley Park was quite good.
I used to go to Edgeley Park for a lot of games because my brother was playing there. I was the.
It was miserable.
I was the pitch announcer. Yeah, but it was getting 10,000, 11,000 regularly.
Yeah. Because anyway. I would just say, it has got some way to go before it's like a Harlequins game day, which is amazing. I love Harlequins game day. And also Bath is a very, very good game day. But it's getting there. It's getting better pretty much a month on month now. So if you're at loose end, definitely go.
I actually don't know. We're living in Manchester. We're in Manchester right now. I don't know either of the football match results for today.
I do know.
I actually don't know.
I know Liverpool scored a goal. Is that right?
Liverpool scored three goals.
Against how many other goals?
One.
Wow. So Liverpool won that, did they?
They did.
Perfect. Bonus point?
maybe for the Fabinho goal.
Manchester United soccer goal?
There were also four goals, and it was the same distribution of goals. 3-1.
Two.
Manchester United.
Oh, fantastic
soccer,
news.
Soccer club.
The City wins all around, because I think it's right. If you're from Manchester, support both teams. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly it.
And
Sale Sharks.
I actually know some. I chat to a guy who said that he used to go to both home games. He used to go every week.
That's quite good, isn't it?
1 week to United, 1 week to City.
I think I would do that if I had the
when games were Saturday, 3 p.m.
Actually, if I had the money and the time, more importantly, because obviously I've got my own rugby commitments, but I could do Sale Sharks on a Friday. I'd happily do a football match. No, actually, would I? Depends if I could get corporate or not.
I was going to say, if me and you could get, if I could swing us like I used to, the Man City corporate, so we could go and sit next to musicians that we weren't quite sure who they were.
We didn't even know who they were. Yeah.
And their hot wives.
Shane Horgan's ex-girlfriend,
yeah.
Yeah. That is pretty much the only time I go to a football match now.
Yeah.
If I'm in corporate.
I have to. I
we sound so relatable. We're so relatable, lads.
And I am not fussy if it's United or City, to be honest.
No, don't care. I won't go to Liverpool.
I am a terrible United fan.
City corporate is so much better than United.
I tell you what, when we went, it's outstanding. Actually.
It's amazing.
I've been good in both, actually.
United's a bit old-fashioned.
The Tunnel Club in City is quite good.
That's insane. Well, Northampton have got their own version of that now.
Have they?
Have you seen that? The Tunnel Club. Yeah, they've got in the tunnel. They've redone it. Moved the Northampton Saints home dressing room, and they now have When I'm working at the games at Franklin's Gardens.
Oh, I've seen it.
Me and Martin Bayfield quite often sit and watch the first half in it, because it's about 15 people can dine in there. It's got its own little bar.
Oh wow!
They dine in it. It's glass on all sides, and you see the sets of players walking in.
Have you seen the one in Cowboy Stadium? It's awesome. It might be like level 2 or something, but it's literally like a party floor. And you know, you can either go and have your beers and watch the game, but because it's on for 3 hours, you generally can just go back, have a little dance, come back out, have some more beers, and because of all the breaks, that's kind of why you should like scrimmaging. So when they have all those scrum resets, that's a good time to go and get a beer or some refreshments and a way to extend the rugby too.
They just need to speed up. Okay, scrum resets are going to happen. They just need to speed up the getting into the scrum.
Or slow it down.
It's getting slower.
Really slow it down.
Hit pause on the time.
On every scrum.
Yeah. Go get a beer.
And then it can take as long as you want. I don't care then.
Yeah.
It's just when the clock is ticking and they're taking
their
time.
But whilst we are on corporate, Sale Sharks corporate is absolutely exceptional. I mean, that isn't a joke either. That is exceptional. So, to the game.
Are we still on this game?
We've not spoken about the game yet. It was a difficult one to watch. I think maybe the most disappointing aspect for Sale would be Ambrose Papier. Did you watch him play?
I saw the try that wasn't a try.
Yeah, so everybody has told me how fast Ambrose Papier is, and I'd never seen it. And then all of a sudden, he does that.
Wow.
Which is awesome. The problem being is he's only on loan. So now to sign Ambrose Papier, if you wanted to do that next year or the year after, just got substantially more expensive, and for no extra points too.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit disappointing.
And he can't be a marquee player anymore.
Because he's played at yeah.
Ooh, that's a good point, Tim.
Yeah.
That is a good point.
Because Jean-Luc Dupree and Rob Dupree couldn't be marquee players, but Dan Dupree could.
Because he hadn't played for them.
I don't know.
Is that right?
I don't know if Dan Dupree is or not, but he can, but his brothers can't. Because they were on loan last year.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
So whatever.
That's Dan Dupree who scored Sale's only try.
Yes.
Yeah, I tell you what,
nice try.
Ambrose Papier, because we hadn't seen much of him in the Premiership. I hadn't seen much of him. I didn't realise he was quite as good as his delivery, his passing is super crisp, and his speed is unbelievable. That looked like Dan Robson, like. Or Joe Simpson in their prime, at their best.
Or Nico Matawalu.
Yeah, yeah, actually, probably more like that.
Probably more like...
Electric. Van Rensburg, as you mentioned before, is really, really coming into his own. But Wasps aren't that far away. I mean, Wasps are a far better outfit than I gave them credit for. I thought the scrimmaging was good. That maul to start with was very good. They just can't seem to focus for 80 minutes. They seem to have these little fades, and it costs them dearly.
I think we there was a number of... We're very, very lucky in the Premiership to have directors of rugby that are as good as they are. They are just great blokes as much as anything.
Mm.
And I think you saw that in Dai Young just called it absolutely bang on. He said, we were too lateral, we didn't get the go forward, and everything stems from there. Rather than complaining about a number of penalties, which I think went against Wasps unfairly, I think they were quite harshly dealt with in this game. He just said, well, that's actually, we've got to control the things we can control, and we didn't control the gain line. We ran sideways, and you're going to get wallets when that
and
happens.
Unless you've got Kibirigi doing something spectacular,
which he did,
where do your points come from? And by the way, that was awesome. That was genuinely awesome.
That was outstanding. Superb.
There's been a few brilliant finishes. And,
and
the other example of that, you know, DOR being really honest, is Rob Baxter was so good after a really disappointing defeat to Bristol.
The thing is with Rob Baxter, he's had those defeats before, hasn't he?
There's a bit of him that seems to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like, right, this is a real challenge now.
Yeah.
This is a real test to my squad. Great. I didn't want this to happen, but now it has. I'm really relishing the fact that it's a big test.
It's a good marker for this week's training, next week's Champions Cup game.
I think you can be more relaxed about it, though, can't you? If you are as good as Rob Baxter and you've got that confidence, you can take his losses and know it's not going to affect you too much going forward because you can use it. If you're not that good, or if you don't know quite
chicken
how to
and
handle,
egg though,
how
because
handle pressure.
It's chicken and egg, though, because I think Exeter have got to that point by being like that, by that process mentality.
That's what I mean. You know, they've got their process and they're confident in them. Someone like Leicester Tigers, who we'll talk about later, every loss to them feels like a small
let's
death.
Let's talk them now, because they're the biggest story of the week.
We're not finished with their Wasps, yeah?
Well...
How much more to cover?
Is there to cover? It was a pretty ugly game. Wasps aren't far off. Sale haven't hit their straps properly yet, but are doing some good things.
So here's something I want to ask you two. I asked this question of Dai Young in the press after, and I asked him, like, do you think that this team is closer to one of your relegation sides when you were fighting that, or do you think it's closer to one of your sides when you nearly win the title? And he seems to think top six, top four.
What's he seemed to say top, because he can't say anything other than that.
If you
present those two options, you think you're close to relegation or the top of the table? He's always got to say top of the table, because otherwise he's not backing his players.
I think he'll believe it.
Okay, so
he will be.
Right, okay, so we've got two things, maybe three then. Okay, so one, what do you think about that team? Do you think it's close to the top, close to the bottom? And two, how would you honestly describe it without losing face if you were Dai Young?
So, I don't think Dai Young can possibly say anything else. I think that team is not the strongest they've had. I think it's closer to the bottom half of the table. If you look back when they had Nathan Hughes, when they had Willie LaRue, when they had Charles Piatau, Cipriani, when Gopeth was in his prime, all those boys fit and firing. Kirtley Beale, Elliot Daly. It is a different team, and given how competitive the Premiership is,
Christian Wade,
given how competitive the Premiership is, I think they are going to be. They're certainly going to be in the bottom half of the table my head.
As competitive as the league is, and let's talk about contexts. Everything going on off the field at Wasps. I think Dai Young's doing a really, really great job to keep everyone kind of together, motivated.
It's going to be a test of skills.
The team ethos.
I think he's already done it. Do you not feel a bit bad for Dai Young?
I do.
Because he had this situation where he got his job in Cardiff. And let's face it, Cardiff are it's an absolute clown show there. He goes over to the Premiership. Wasps are a clown show. Then they get their act together, and then he nearly wins the league, and that feels like he's going back to where he came from. I mean, I'm surprised he's stuck about, actually, because it must feel you must get so downbeat after going through all of that, only to come on the other side of it. You can't keep your players for whatever reason. You're continually having to rebuild the squad, and they're doing well. I mean, the signings they've made are bloody good, actually. A dog who played well, Kibirigi, I can't say his name now, Kibirigi could be signing of the season if he carries on.
Sopoanga is a big name signing.
Yeah, and
Minozzi
he's
is
starting. Sopoanga's starting to show
a little
bit of a glimpse of what he could do.
I need to tell you this. I need to tell you this because it is important. So right at the start of the game, Sale had their community officer, a guy called Craig Moynihan, who got injured in Afghanistan, arranged for some veterans to bring out the game ball. So there is a veteran in a wheelchair with the ball just outside of the tunnel. The Wasps boys come out full game head on, fully ready to play, except for one, which was Lima Sopoanga, who ran out, stopped, went shook the guy's hand, had about a 5-second chat, and then went off. I thought that is so nice. What a nice man.
That is a classy move.
It was actually quite a touching moment.
Yeah,
I thought, you know, you're about to play a game. You're probably the most important guy in that team. It's on your shoulders, and he had it's only like 5 seconds, but it's still nice.
It's just a good touch.
Yeah. Nice touch. Yeah.
Fair play.
So I think we should talk Quinns and Leicester. Talk about them in tandem because
in what order? Because. Should we do Leicester first?
Leicester, what's going on? We thought there were some green shoots
after last week's win.
After last week's win against Gloucester,
yeah,
against Gloucester, goodness, yeah,
yeah,
goodness.
So maybe we should talk about bloody Gloucester.
Yeah,
what is going on?
I know.
So, my first reaction was not to overreact to this loss. It's just another loss, like every other loss. So I think. Probably the best thing to do is raise the buildings, burn the records, and salt the earth. I mean, that's where we're at now.
Is that disrespectful to London Irish?
No, London Irish did well. They can enjoy their win, but we need to focus on Leicester, I think. Nothing short of club vandalism has occurred at Leicester. I think now that they're going to... if they have decency, I think the board should resign en masse. I think what they've done there... has stumble and blunder from one season to the next. You start with the firing of Cockers, then Major, then the misappointment of Matt O'Connor, then not having the balls to go out and get a different coach, bringing in Jordan Murphy, and it's not his fault. In fact, he's probably the last person to blame. Instead of letting him build up his own squad of coaches, you've continually bolted on all these other coaches. You've now brought in John McGinty. You've got Pat Howard to do some sort of report. And all the while, the guys at the top of the tree have stayed there, and they should all go, and so should a good portion of the senior players. I think at this point in time, obviously they are favourites to go down because they are bottom, but they might be the favourites to go down full stop actually, unless something improves drastically. I mean, even if it doesn't, bottom half of the table finish for a club like Leicester, not good enough.
So I do agree with a lot of things you said. One thing. There are certain senior players, well, there's a number of the senior players that I would keep. There were actually very, very few senior players involved in this game.
And that's the other caveat. Genge, look at the Cole,
Ford
Young, May, Manu.
Youngs,
other Youngs.
Manu, May.
Yeah.
Vianu took a knock when absent.
The two senior players who actually showed up well in this game. Jonah Holmes and Guy Thompson.
Guy Thompson, sorry. Yeah.
Guy Thompson. Those two played very, very well and battled very, very hard and tried to lead by example. But the guys around them aren't necessarily up to it.
But everyone has lost World Cup players. I mean, they're not the only team to...
No, that's not fair.
It is fair.
That's not fair. So you're telling me Gloucester and Harlequins and Sale... and
London Irish.
And London Irish have got Genge, Cole, Youngs, Ford, May, Tuilagi, Vianu.
But literally
half a team.
I mean,
Bath
have got the whole back three missing. They're missing McConaughey.
Yes. I'm not saying there aren't other players away, but I'm saying...
They're all disproportionately hit, I guess.
Yeah,
but this isn't a new thing. I mean, they finished second to bottom last year, and there was excuses for that. I've got two competing theories about what has happened at Leicester. Number one is number one, and probably the main one, is what I just explained before about leadership. But maybe there's think which the leadership couldn't have avoided. So number one would be, has rugby's culture bypassed Leicester's culture? So what do you think of, out of interest, when you think of a classic Leicester team?
Big pack, big scrum.
So my first thought was
your second most important player is your reserve tight head.
Tight head, yeah. And I love that idea. Then I thought about that, and I thought, yeah, maybe rugby's just passed on. It's all about skills and offloading and this, that, and the other. But it's not, is it? I mean, you started, yeah, you started the podcast by saying scrums are still important.
You've got to have the foundations. If you ignore, you can have all the skills in the world, but if you've not got the foundations, it's irrelevant. It's like building a beautiful, architecturally perfect house on a bed of sand.
Exactly right. So you've either got a situation where the game has bypassed Leicester, or the people in charge of Leicester have gone away from Leicester's core values. I tend to think it is the latter. And then it's a case of kind of like sand on a beach. If you wash away a bit of sand on a beach, the rest of it goes very, very quickly. And I think as soon as they started eroding that culture, however many years ago, it's just completely gone. So when you get players coming into Leicester now, they don't become Leicester players. They don't buy into that Leicester culture. They are their own individuals. Whereas if you're a top-class, world-class player that goes into Saracens, you have to buy into what Saracens are.
Yes, but what Saracens... No, but this is where I do disagree with you, because...
Exeter. Let's use Exeter.
Exeter and Saracens, I think, are both the same. But Exeter and Saracens, yes, they have very set cultures that you buy into, but they are 21st century cultures. What you're describing as being the Leicester, the massive Tuesday physical Bosch session where we'll have punch-ups and fights.
Yeah, box it in.
The game has moved on from that.
Yeah, so that's...
The game has moved on from that.
Agreed. So maybe what Leicester were relying on has gone past them and they've not caught up. And actually, you know, we are where we are.
Another thing, just to highlight differences. So the stability of the leadership in Saracens and Exeter, Mark McCall and Baxter particularly, over the last... How long have those two been in rule? 10 years? Whereas you look at the last 10 years of coaches for Leicester, and it's like, so their selection of coaches and DORs has been trying to follow a formula that has never been right, and they've continued to stick with it.
And the shame of it is, I think Leicester made a really good choice. So I think it's possible to make good choices through the right processes and still come out with the wrong answer. And I think that... what's his name? Something Cohen, first name?
Simon.
Simon Cohen is basically that wrong answer. I love the idea that you went out and got an agent, and you know he used to be Green Room Sport or some such thing. You get a guy who knows the player market inside out, who knows contracts inside out. It happens a lot in American football. You get agents going into front office of American football teams. I think it's a very, 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 very smart thing to do. But you know, you fast forward, it just hasn't worked. Hasn't worked out. So they have tried to modernise.
I think that it is going to take a while. They are making some good decisions in terms of personnel. I wouldn't judge them on this weekend, and I think it's a longer process. But as I've said on the podcast many times before, you can crystallise why Leicester are where they are in the hooker position. Because think how much cash is tied up in fantastic blokes. Don't confuse this with any sort of conversation about the personal character of the men. They are fine men, but how much money is tied up in Tom Youngs and Tatafu Palotta now, and what have they let go in Harry Thacker? And right there, you can
and McGuigan
amplify that outwards and across the squad, and there you go. That's your issue. And Northampton, Jim Mallander got himself into a very similar situation at Northampton. He kept too many players too long, didn't let these guys that were clearly chomping at the bit to get game time in, and someone fresh who cleaned house, look at the difference it makes.
Yeah.
The problem with that is Leicester have tried to clean house this season.
Well, they will never clean house, because as long as Simon Cohen's there, and it's not a knock on him personally, but he's the guy picking the players and doing, you know. So, again, if they were to make the same decision when hiring him as first time round, I think it's a good idea. I think it's a terrific idea to go that route. It just hasn't worked out, and it's the board that need to go, because they've had so many chances. I've got a question for you two. If you were going to be put in charge of Leicester Tigers tomorrow, what would be your fundamental moves to right this ship?
I mean, I'm not even sure where to start with that, because I was a fan of what they did last season in the closed season, as in offloading a load of talent and bringing a few key players in. But I still think you look at the squad and there's Deadwood.
Yep.
So yeah. I don't think it can be turned around this season, because you're already signed up for this season. So the first thing
I would do is acknowledge that this is
a building year.
This is we're going to have to take some time with this. And I don't think, I mean, I think there will have been Northampton fans. I'm sure Chris Boyd was as ambitious as he is, but I'm sure there's a lot of Northampton fans and maybe some people around the club who thought they might not be looking at this season as, oh, we could have a sniff here. Maybe they're thinking, oh, that might be next year. But So I would take a slightly longer term view. I think you're right. They pruned and made some decent signings. And I'll go back to this and I'll say it in terms of like Quinn's in the past, not so much right now, but I don't like the fact that it's a massive disadvantage, particularly in a World Cup year, to have great players.
Mm. Yeah.
Because it has a salary cap. There's only so many players and so many quality of players you can have. And in a World Cup year, Leicester are...
Do you think...
It's that they are being ravaged.
As Phil would say, though, do you think there's an element of Leicester playing on tilt, i.e. they are so desperate for lads now that the salary cap's going to be working against them, because they'll be paying over the odds for Labaninis and whoever it is.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah. They're so desperate to get that top spot back. It's like, right, here is as much cash as you can have, and we'll give, they're going to be overpaying for more internationals who will be away.
Yeah, that is a risk. Yeah. I do, as much as I like Jordan Murphy, and I like a lot of what he says, I'm not sure I would have stuck with him.
I mean, Jordan Murphy had a chance a few years ago, as I understand it, or as rumoured, to either be coach of Northampton, was on that shortlist, and he was also on the shortlist, I think, for Cardiff Blues, and Leicester retained him. I know you want to keep your guys in-house, but wouldn't they be in a better situation if they wanted Jordan Murphy to coach the club, to have him at least experiment with Cardiff Blues for a little while?
Yeah.
Or Northampton for a little while, and then bring him back?
More experience of more things.
Yeah. At this point, I'm so down on Leicester Tigers. I don't think they're ever going to win.
They're the new Wasps for you. You've been complimented.
Yeah. Well, no, Wasps are the new Wasps. So down on Leicester Tigers that I don't think they're going to ever win anything again with what they have with the management. It's almost as if a relegation might be the only thing which can actually,
factory reboot.
Yeah, factory let the blood. I mean, that's the only thing which I think can happen.
Which Quinns and Northampton both had that. They both press reset in the mid-2000s, and both in the last 10 years have won the league.
Yeah.
So it might not be the worst thing in the world.
I mean,
it would be very hard for Leicester to take after their winning so many titles and being never missing out on top four for so many years. It might actually be a better thing.
This feels a bit reactionary to me, based on one very bad performance.
And last season.
I understand. But I don't think anyone was thinking, Leicester, they're going to be challenging top four this year.
No, true. And that's the problem.
Yeah, true.
Well, but then suddenly talking in these terms now.
Well, maybe
they
lost
a relegation decider potentially.
Maybe we should have always been straight. Maybe they are treating this as a rebuilding year. Maybe they're going to try out long-term combinations for the future in this.
There's just so many. I mean, you can talk circularly about Leicester because you sort of addressing one aspect of their problems, and it comes back to the next aspect, and it's all a bit of a mess.
So, on that note, we should praise London Irish
quite
because this is not a vintage Leicester team, but this was a very good performance by London Irish,
who still have Adam Coleman to come back in.
Yeah,
now or not come back in to come in.
Come in.
Can I?
Waisaki Naholo got on the score sheet in his debut.
Yeah, he's a bloody good player.
So I'm going to link this back to Leicester. And simultaneously link it back to Northampton. Northampton had their problems, cleared house. Like when they got rid of Alex King. And obviously that solved everything. Well, they got rid of Stephen Myler, And how good is it to watch him kicking points back in the Premiership? The much maligned Stephen Myler leading his team to victory. I absolutely love it.
And victory against the old enemy Leicester Tigers.
Perfect. It could not be more perfect.
Yeah. And a bonus point win for London Irish. Yeah. Those bonus points will be important at the end of the season.
Quinns are the one that I think, and this is why I say it's a bit, I feel it's a bit reactionary, given the context of all of Leicester's internationals away, and given what they were last season, they were 11th. I think it's a bit reactionary to go too hard on him. Quinns, on the other hand, one win from four.
And, so I went back and had a look at their collapse last season. Their Premiership form is currently two wins from 11 games.
Oh my word, really?
So you multiply that across 22 games a season, you don't have to be a brilliant mathematician like me to work out.
One, two, double, so it's double two, right? So
double two.
Two, so that's like two, and then like another
two.
Another two, okay.
Another
right. two.
Me.
So if they keep that form up this season, I'm not saying they will do, but that is relegation form. That's definitely relegation form.
And compared to where Quinns looked like they were going last season, and compared to where we would have been talking about them, people would have been talking about them in pre-season, and with the bonus of saying, they're not actually losing that many players to the World Cup. They could be in a good spot here.
Yeah.
That's the one I think deserves the most attention as them and Gloucester are the ones I'm going, hold on a minute, what's going on?
Gloucester will be fine, because...
Yeah,
Gloucester 100%, yeah. 1,000,000%
as we said,
faith in Johan Ackerman.
As we said earlier on, I think we'll look back at this first month of the season and go, well, that meant nothing.
Yeah, I've heard some worrying things about Quinns, nothing which I would repeat. But you are right to raise this issue, Tim. I mean, who would you rather be in charge of at the moment? Quinns or Tigers?
Oh, Quinns.
I think Quinns, just about.
I would also say Quinns.
What do you think of...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Joe Marchant re-signing, by the way. That's a bit of a tangent.
So I really like it.
Yeah, I do.
I like it from both sides.
See, there's a salary cap implication going on there.
The cynical side of me might think something like Dave Atwood to Toulon maybe a couple of years ago. But I actually don't think that. I see this as Quinns are looking...
That's an interesting point, though.
It is.
Since Sam Burgess retired, all roads lead to the salary cap now. So, yeah, it's quite smart, isn't it, in a way?
So I really like it as a move for both the club and the player, because in my mind, I said this last week specifically about coaches, the more experience you get, the better. Now, coaches have a potential 30-year window, so you can go and Ronald Guerra could spend 10 years travelling around the world and learning all the best bits from everyone else. A player, you're lucky to get a 10-year window. Now, Marchant is still 23. He's got a number of England caps. He's highly talented, but he has got 8 to 10 good years left in him. So for him to spend 6 months learning from some of the best, going, playing against some of the best, learning a totally different way of playing, it's an amazing opportunity for him to play with, I mean, just to name a couple, but Beauden Barrett and Rico Ioane in a back line. That's fairly handy.
It is quite handy, isn't it?
So I like it from his side, and I like it from the club.
I love it, and also...
He's going to be better. We will invest in him. We'll invest this in him so that next season he will be even better than he is. Yeah.
And if you want to look at where we are now, it's 2019. So we're talking about this happening in 2020 and the next World Cup.
Is it not 2023 in January?
Yeah,
January 2020.
Oh, sorry, I understand. Yeah.
So, and the next World Cup's 2023, so it's perfect.
So I do perfect. Like it, and I don't like it. So let me tell you why I do like it, for all the reasons that Phil's just said. The reason I don't like it is twofold. One, it tells me Quinn's aren't expecting to win anything now. But two, I don't like it from Joe March's point of view. Because every time that you go away to New Zealand,
More boring than London. Yeah. That's basically what you're saying. You're in West London, what are you doing?
Well, yes, there is that. But he's made an error. Don't sign that new contract until you're in New Zealand. Right, the New Zealand premium for English players is sky high. Now, I'm not saying that Pierce Francis is not worth the money that he's on.
Or Matt Simmons.
I'm not saying that. But I bet you a lot of money, they have got a substantial pay rise because they were playing over there and were highly regarded by the New Zealand press, rather than if they had a season at Nottingham. Or, you know, even in the Pro 14, even somewhere like a stone's throw away. I wouldn't have signed that deal until I had 6 months of highlights in Super Rugby beating up on...
Oh, the attacking highlights you can get from Super Rugby.
Oh, my word. Here's Joe Marchant running full speed at no defenders. Amazing. Sign that man.
And that's even in the context that I imagine he'll be being very handsomely rewarded. But anyway, I think you'll probably see someone like Rico Ioane at Quinn's for a bit.
That's interesting.
Although, I mentioned this before. I think we talked about it on last week's podcast. I said... Paul Gustard's selection does make me scratch my head a little bit. Mm. With the chopping and changing, week on week on week, and wingers that come out of nowhere straight into the starting 15, then they're out and never seen again. And we talked about the players, Charlie Walker and Tim Visser and other guys that just didn't get a look in last year. This is starting to look a bit odd to me. And in the context of one win out of four, I was talking about it before then. I don't get it.
I wonder, be honest, Tim, have you heard some whispers?
What do you mean?
As in, I've heard whispers that not everyone is particularly happy with the way things have been handled at Quinn's.
No, and I... And not,
no. But you would never speculate on rumours anyway, no?
I wouldn't, but no, okay. I've not.
Well, I've not heard those things either. I'm with you. It does look particular.
I was just thinking about Paul Gustard, because there was a lot of pictures of Saracens, and there was one picture of Paul Gustard with the Premiership trophy, looking ripped in the dressing room, with his top off, leading the Tiki Tonga.
He's a big slice.
Yeah. He's a big lad. Anyway, and I was thinking, oh yeah, he came from Saracens, didn't he? Where that was...
Oh my God, are you saying he's an agent?
That was how Mark McCall ran things. You would quite often see that. The certain positions at Saracens would chop and change quite a lot.
This brings me to something.
But it doesn't work at Quinn's.
This brings me to something that Phil said. Did you say it on the podcast? About players playing for United or what have you, who got specific roles.
Yeah, it was Alex Ferguson from one of his books, I think.
I think we spoke.
Yeah, we did speak about it on the podcast.
Yeah. And we did say, I wonder if Saracens do that. And I wonder if an element of that.
You're my man for this 3 week block.
Yeah.
So we are playing Quinn's, we are playing Saracens in 3 weeks' time. James Lang. You're not going to play for the next 3 weeks.
But you're going to be outside centre.
Yeah.
You're
going to do this role. But in this case, we're playing Worcester in 3 weeks' time. It's a must win home game. You're going to play outside centre in 3 weeks' time.
Mind you, Langers is rapid.
So study Venter or Beck or Ollie Lawrence. Study all of them.
All three of them.
And then mark them out of the game. Or not.
Yeah, or just let them through at will. It's completely up to you, really. You're the man.
So this game for Quinn's, obviously, it's a home loss against one of the historically weaker teams in the league. And they were 14-0 up.
It's very similar to the Exeter-Bristol game.
They were 14-0 up after 14 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, you don't have to be a brilliant mathematician like me to work out how many points they should accumulate after 80 minutes.
80 points?
It should have been 80-0.
80-0?
80-0.
Have I told you about the time that I scored one try in 1 minute?
You have, but tell us again.
Okay. Lancashire Cup final, right? I was named... the ultimate humiliation for Broughton Park, just got into the first team, playing at the time in the back row. Mark Lloyd, our old coach, names the team, goes through all the reserves, gives first reserve back row, Mark McConnell, second reserve back row, Jonathan Beardmore. Well, and everyone laughed at me, of course, because it's a stupid position. 1 minute left of the Lancashire Cup final, we are trailing. Beardmore, get on. score it within 1 minute.
Anyway. Can I just say something else on that front? I don't care if it's a cup final, if it's a league game, if it's whatever. If I'm coaching amateur rugby, giving someone 1 minute is pathetic.
Well, particularly when he scored one try. I mean, that's 80 tries.
That's 80 tries in a game.
80 tries on the bench and we lost the Lancashire Cup.
I don't.
Didn't you make that explicitly clear when you got back into the dressing room after the game?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Where's your medal? I threw it into a hedge.
But on a serious note,
the medal in a hedge instead of park somewhere. So if you're a scarf, it might be worth some money.
On a serious note, did the coach say to you, look, but by the way, just be prepared before this game. I might not use you.
No.
Or it might be. Right. So just on a serious note, because there may be people involved in amateur club rugby or whatever. If I was the coach and doing that, I would actually say, JB, might not use you. Would you rather have a game for the twos?
There was no twos game. This was like
cup final.
This is cup final.
Would you have played if he'd said you're going to have 1 minute?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because you never know,
one drive.
You know, fingers crossed. One of your teammates might have a horrific broken leg. I mean, you never know.
Well, at least he should have told you that before the warm up, so you could take. You could sniper at someone's knee. Yeah, tackle.
Trip someone up. We were winning.
Dog grew their face.
We were winning that cup final quite comfortably.
That should be an adjective, by the way. You just got doggered.
We were winning, three tries or something. We were winning comfortably at half time. And the team come out for the second half, because at cup final, you're allowed to go back in the change room. We come out for the second half, and we're missing at least one centre who was on the toilet with a rather suspect stomach after a massive night out. So they spent the first 5 minutes of the second half with 14 players on, rather than substitute, because it wasn't even interchange then. It was full on subs. And I can't remember how we lost it, but we did, and we lost it badly against Vale of Loon.
The day that England won the Rugby World Cup in 2003, I think it was Newbury I was playing for, and I didn't get on in the game.
Ugh.
But I was getting paid. I got paid, so it was fine. It's fine.
It was
good. And I didn't care about that, but no, it wasn't Ben Ryan. No. But that's different. So yeah, just any amateur rugby players like. Give everyone a game, minimum 20 minutes. It's ridiculous.
There is a problem with amateur rugby, that some clubs are in the amateur era and they are amateur, but they forget they're amateur. And I think a club like Broughton Park would often forgets where its station is now.
But they at least don't pay players.
They don't pay some players.
Okay.
So, if you think about it, if you were a big club back in the day, like an Oral, say, there is a good chance that not this incarnation of Oral, the last incarnation of Oral. It's a good chance that your committee members still think that you should be pushing for championship rugby. And there's no way that you'll be pushing for championship rugby, but they want that seriousness. They want the subs to be treated in the same way. They want to see your moves look like England's moves. And that's basically, I think, where a lot of clubs in the Northwest who were big clubs, that's the way they got. In fact, it probably happens up and down the country. Almost certainly does.
I'm certain it does.
Yeah. I agree with you, Tim. You've got to give every player a certain amount of time. And it's your job as a coach to engineer what job that they can do. You've got to make sure they can do a job.
Or at least be honest with the guy beforehand.
Yeah.
Yeah, but don't take
So would you, like, again, obviously it was a cup final and there was no other games, but I would actually say if you'd rather have a game for the twos.
Yeah, you've got to get them on. You've got to get them on. But I think that's why there's a disconnect from... You know, look at the stuff that like Russell Earnshaw does.
The Magic Academy guys.
Yeah. Now, I don't agree with all the stuff that goes on there, but that's good because I shouldn't. That is a million miles away, that sort of progressive open thinking about
if you don't know about this, it's former England sevens player.
He's under 20, he was under 21's,
under 21's coach.
Fantastic mind, frankly.
Brilliant coach, was part of the England setup, and you can track him and his what's the guy he works with?
John Fletcher.
Fletcher, yeah. So Russell Earnshaw and John Fletcher, you can track the success of the England under 20 side. What's the point at which they were no longer involved? Oh, there it is. The graph just suddenly dips.
Yeah,
funnily enough. So now they have this thing. They go around and coach.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's fascinating.
It's fascinating
thinking. But that's a million miles away from the culture that you get in clubs, particularly ones that really want to get to the next level, and the next level, and the next level. Like Sedgley Park would be a good example. That sort of stuff is not getting in Sedgley Park.
However, that kind of quite progressive, positive mentality, processes, process-driven approach, I think is actually what clubs like Exeter and Saracens have in an elite setting. That's their. That's what they've done.
So one of the coaches said something really interesting to me, who was an England 20s coach. He said, we teach these kids all these skills and they get to a Premiership club and they need about 70% of them. I think that's probably more things. I think, again, club rugby, competitive club rugby, is not always similar to, say, under-20s rugby or player development rugby. There's a huge, huge gulf. So I'll give you an example of things like...
I still don't understand the downside of that. Is that a negative?
Yeah, I think it is.
They only need 70% of the skills that they have.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, because the Premiership clubs.
So you should have spent all the time making the 70% better and ignore the 30% totally.
Well, you could argue about that. You could argue.
Well,
about,
no, is that what you're saying?
No, I would say that if you're preparing young players to come through, no, actually, it does make sense to have them overskilled because they can fit into any system then. But I guess when you're in that system, it's a case of then mastering that system, which is slightly different.
Yeah, I was listening to Science of Sport podcast on how do you build the greatest rugby team, and they were speaking to a guy who's written a book on the All Blacks, and he was making the suggestion that so the All Blacks, when they lose a player, either through injury or when one of the greats retires, there is less of a impact on the team because all of the players have such a high foundation of skills that they can fit. It's not that they naturally don't do exactly the same role, but they can fit into the team.
You're not looking
better.
For an identical jigsaw piece.
Yes. Yeah.
The jigsaw will sort of fuse together and then break itself apart in a new shape.
85% of all the jigsaws are the same, so they will nicely fit alongside each other and then just merge in with that extra 15% in one direction or another.
So I guess my point about the skills is, do I want a second row who is phenomenally skilled at all these bits?
I mean, yes, I do.
Maybe yes, but I'd rather one that knows the line out inside out and can push really hard.
We're never ever going to see a goal kicking lock again, are we? Like John Eales.
Thank God.
It's unlikely.
I mean, there are some things that I'm happy to leave in the past.
Oh, it's so good, though.
I said he was a really good kicker. Chris Jones from Sale. I was talking to his university coach, and they wouldn't let him kick. And then
the old lock slash back row.
Yeah, and then apparently in university he said, I really want to kick. Last game of the season, nailed them all.
Favourite thing like that, when we had JB and I played in a game where the tight head prop was goal kicker.
Yeah.
And he was a big old unit of a tight head prop.
Oh,
Connor.
Connor. I've definitely seen a Broughton Park first team game where Connor was kicking from tight head. He missed like 4 out of 4 and they lost, I think, 20-odd nil to Lee.
Yeah, but when we had to call him up, Corner! We thought of the wind, they said Connor, so we roll up Connor to get the most unlikely kick to win the game. Nails it! Win the game.
Against the wind from halfway.
Yep, nearly escaped relegation, but we didn't. Nice story, though. Nice story.
Yes.
Talking of nice stories, Europe's next week.
Just before we do,
we've
spoke a lot, great length about Quinns and Leicester. We gave some praise to London Irish, rightly so. We should definitely give some praise to Worcester Warriors.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Phil, by the way, I did tell you not to worry about... In Fantasy Rugby Draft, Phil's computer froze when it was his turn to make selection. His second round pick. It just went into auto draft for Phil.
Ugh.
And he got Duncan Weir.
Ugh.
And as a result, he, as a backup, you know, after the... he picked up off the free agency John O'Lance
to handcuff them,
and you were gutted. You were like, I can't believe it. I messed it. I was like, mate, you're not going to regret that, because you were going for Lima Sopawanga.
Yeah, but
why? Well, because he's a nice guy.
The way he treats veterans. Yeah, exactly that.
Well,
I'm not too. I'm annoyed. I benched Guy Thompson.
Do you know
who
I'm annoyed?
Annoyed
with? Like, seriously, annoyed with? Makes me want to throw things at him. Ollie Lawrence, why can't he get a game? What's wrong with the boy?
You don't need to worry about your team at the moment.
Why can't Ollie Lawrence play?
He came off the bench.
He's a young man.
Yeah, but
he's
going to be the future of all things rugby, and he's in my fantasy team. I expect him to play soon, or I'm going to him and Thakatura have been the biggest disappointment so far
in fantasy rugby draft.
In fantasy rugby draft. In real life,
asterisk. I'm the biggest disappointment so far, probably on the field for the fans this weekend. And in my fantasy rugby draft team, is the Northampton front row. sort yourselves out, lads. Yeah, come on. For my sake, I was two wins from two. Now I'm two from four.
Filled my heart with joy, that.
Minus 20.3.
Mm. Yeah, Worcester are doing a great job. A really great job. I've said it before. I never thought that...
Who's bottom of the table then? Is it Leicester?
Leicester. Yeah. I mean, it's something like Leicester...
Quins?
Wasps, Quins.
Leicester Wasps, Quins.
Those are the three former champ. Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, three former champions.
Those are the three...
10th, 11th, 12th.
With one from four.
Wow.
Then you've got six teams with two from four. Bath, Worcester, London Irish, Exeter, Gloucester, Sale... And the three teams who have won three out of four, Saracens, Northampton and Bristol right now on points difference by 1 point are
top
of the
table.
Wow.
So Alan Solomon's doing a marvellous job. And I don't know how much praise goes to him, how much praise goes to Rory Duncan.
Well, that's an interesting one. So
I never thought that this would work.
In the summer, they said Rory Duncan's leaving.
Oh, did they? I wasn't aware of that.
And then he was linked to some other jobs. Mm-hmm. And they said, I think the sort of comments were, yes, Rory's exploring other opportunities and we're happy for him to go. Then, just before the season, it was, oh, no, he's staying.
Good.
But I don't know if that was he's staying, but he can still explore other opportunities because we ultimately are going to let him go, or he's staying and we want him to be part of it. But whatever the combination and whatever the chemistry is, it's really working.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because Worcester, as I understand it, are trying to get sold, right? They really want to get sold.
Oh, no, they've got the new owners.
Yeah,
didn't they? Oh, yeah, they've got the
new
owners.
No, they're investing in the...
led by with Dave Seymour involved. Silly me.
They're investing in...
property.
Trying to build some...
property.
Like a sort of entertainment facility, you make it a gig venue, that kind of thing.
I mean, they're not holding on to players as they should. I mean, they lost some last year, they lost some this year.
They brought some in to replace
guys. They have. But more importantly, the coaches are doing a great job and the team
Let's be clear, Bryce Heem went because he had an opportunity
of a lifetime
to earn mega bucks.
Yeah, good for him. The thing about Worcester is as soon as they start winning, you know, like they've got a really good fan base, so it might be a small stadium, but actually they can create a lot of noise. I expect them to be pretty good at home, and if they can pick up a few more results like this, bloody hell!
Yeah, going to the Stoop and winning is a good result.
I mean, that if they can get win one in three away games and have a solid home record, that's a serious
outfit. Good. Yeah, definitely,
definitely. So yeah, as you say, attention moves to Europe.
And there's a couple of other news stories.
Oh, yes.
we've not touched on.
There's also a result that I would like.
How long are we running at the minute?
Not long enough.
it feels very long.
Feels very long.
Very long. just one result I'd like to dwell on.
Oh, okay.
Ospreys 14, Kings 16, at Ospreys.
So, the thing I most enjoyed about this was
everything.
Well.
Is there anything you didn't enjoy about it?
So I enjoyed Kings getting their first ever win, away win in the Pro 14.
Amazing.
What I enjoyed most, what really gave me a chuckle this morning, was when I was reading the rugby paper and I was flicking through Shane Williams' column.
Oh, yeah.
And he was talking about how electric and exciting the Ospreys backline is and how good it would be if Liam Williams joined it. And it just made me laugh because that would have been written before that game, so I just quite enjoyed the.
Now, yeah, to Saracen's salary cap woes, they might be able to solve it by saying, "Look, Liam, we're going to give you a massive pay cut, and you're going to take it, or you're going to Ospreys.
You have to go back to Wales. No,
yeah, I'll play for free." Do you know who played lock for the Kings?
Sexton.
Correct,
Jerry Sexton. Yes.
Wow. Anyway, that's our Pro 14 roundup done. What was the other news that you had?
So there was a few other stories. So I'll run through them very, very quickly.
Okay.
Scotland were fined £70,000.
Lol.
For their Typhoon Hagibis comments and the threat of legal action.
Good. Lesson there is keep your mouth shut.
Yeah. Especially if people are dying.
Yeah. Yes. Quite.
Other news. So Beast has retired.
Because he heard our podcast, wanted the fairy tale
ending. Heard our podcast, wanted to make sure he was one of the fairy tale endings, yeah.
Yeah, so that is a fairy tale ending. Francois Lowe is also retired from international rugby.
Okay, good.
Dylan Hartley retires,
shame,
which we mentioned before.
Yeah,
that is not a fair retirement.
By the way, can I say I still am, call me very old fashioned, I don't like anyone retiring from international rugby. I think you don't decide when you're not making yourself available for your country. Your country decides if it needs you or not. And if your country needs you, you answer your country's call. Call me old fashioned. That's why I know that's not realistic. I don't know. I'm saying.
What, even if your club gives you a massive pay rise. Just to retire?
Wow.
Hypothetically, not that they could do that.
Like, oh, I mean, we're recording this on Remembrance Sunday, and you know what?
Don't retire from international rugby.
Don't retire from international rugby. That's not what you take from
Remembrance Sunday. You've got it all wrong. I think we all stand in solidarity with you there, Tim.
Yes,
absolutely. Other news?
No. I just want to dwell on Dylan Hartley.
Yes.
So far too often now, you speak to players. Or you watch players, and there's a certain monotoneness about how they come across. I think Dylan Hartley might have had one of the best careers ever, because not only has he done the whole international thing very successfully, and being a captain, and by the way, a bloody good captain too, despite what everyone said. Said about him prior to this.
He was instrumental. When you actually look at it in retrospect, in that 4-year block leading up to a World Cup final, he was instrumental at helping Eddie Jones
100%.
change the tone, change the dynamic, and get a world record equaling number of straight wins.
Tier one straight wins.
He won.
Cyprus.
He's won the Premiership, right?
Yeah.
And the best part about it is he's done it all with a horrible disciplinary record. And it just tells you, doesn't it, that...
Never a line.
Yeah, talent is more important than being a good boy. You know, you can do basically whatever you want, providing that you are talented enough. And if
except
that's
go to a World Cup or a Lions tour.
Except for that. But it didn't even matter. In fact, if in some ways, it's better that he didn't, because now he's phenomenally interesting. Who do you want to hear talk? Of all of these players... In his generation, who is going to be more interesting after dinner, or whose book is going to be more interesting? It's going to be Dylan Hartley, because he is, you know, he's done it all. He's done the good, he's done the bad. He's had the most interesting career of probably any player over the last 10 years.
I liked his tweet that said, churches,
yes.
sponsors of Northampton, did a post saying, legend of the game, true gentleman, Dylan Hartley, blah, blah, blah. And he said, Thank you very much for the 15 seasons of free shoes. I was always the best dressed at my hearings.
Yeah.
Bravo.
And his accountant all of a sudden is retrospectively filling in his payment in kind
exactly.
in shoes. Other news then, Phil, rattle through it.
So there is another signing. Sonny Bill to Toronto.
Sonny
Bill. Confirmed.
Yeah, he's coming to Manchester.
He is here on Wednesday.
Really?
He's here on Wednesday. He's looking for houses on Wednesday.
And speculation that he's being joined by some other big names.
So there's speculation that Toronto are after Manu to go alongside Sonny Bill.
And Semi Radrada.
And Semi.
And who are Leeds after?
Leeds are after George Ford.
That is the one I think's got real legs.
It's the money is the issue for me in rugby league.
George Ford's still only 26, 27.
Yeah, he is.
But why not start of a new World Cup cycle?
Because
learn a few more things. Get out.
For a 6-month period.
Yeah, get out of that dumpster fire, which is Leicester Tigers.
It's a way out of Leicester, which is positive. Bit of summer rugby, learn something different is a positive. I just can't see the money being sufficient.
No. How much would you need?
Well, if Tony Adams melts down his gold chain... They've got a chance of being able to afford him.
They could unveil him on that little desk by the vending
the sports
machine.
Hall.
Hear me now, believe me later. I think Leeds will find a way to get him in. I'm not sure what the salary cap rules are in league, but I'm pretty sure you can have an uncapped player, and that's where he would go. And all of a sudden, rugby league, the Super League, are running a competition with Sonny Bill in it and George Ford. That's quite exciting, and Semi Radrada, and maybe Manu Tuilagi.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you want to watch the... I can't say that. well, no, I can't, because they don't play here. I was going to say, if you want to watch the Wolfpack, they're in Manchester, but you can't watch them because they don't play in Manchester. They just train in Manchester.
True. When they're over here.
And they'll play within half an hour of Manchester most games.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, go to your local... Well, say go to your local Super League. You don't have a local Super League club unless you're in Manchester.
Go to your closest.
Which case you've got seven.
And then we've got loads. Salford, yeah. Warrington, St. Helens... Wigan.
Widnes.
Widnes.
Well, there was
Huddersfield.
Allegedly, Salford City Reds made a bid for Manu like 2 years ago. I'm not sure how serious the
under
bid was.
Kukash.
Kukash. Source of wealth unknown. If you think that the Saracens players' sources of wealth are mysterious, well, good luck. But yeah, I'm excited for Super League.
So two more bits of news, both a bit more lighthearted. So allegedly, Haskell is going into the jungle.
Good. That will be great entertainment.
That'll be great.
It will be great entertainment. I don't know how he's going to have time to run all his businesses and be a UFC fighter or a cage fighter and go into the jungle.
He will make it work. Remarkable at time management.
It's very good thinking that he's holding back the wedding till after he's in the jungle.
He got married last year, didn't he?
Did he get married? I got engaged.
I think he's married.
I think he got married this summer, I want to say.
Oh, well, fair play, because he's done that. I didn't realise he's done that under the radar.
I find him absolutely magnetic. Mm. Do I find him magnetic enough to watch Jungle? Maybe I do.
Maybe. There are definitely some good sound bites and highlights.
We missed... I need a bona fide proper international player like James Haskell, a few years younger, to go in on Love Island. That's the one that I want to see.
Henry Slade
on Love Island. I mean, he's got a girlfriend. So.
But he's not married yet.
Henry Slade There's on Love time. Island. Who's Jonathan that? Joseph Hang on Love Island.
Yeah.
Now, we have discussed Love Island before, and frankly, too many of the lads now, as we discussed with Dylan Hartley, they're not interesting enough.
Ellis Genge on Love Island.
Now we're talking.
Yes. That's the one.
I think, what did we come to a conclusion that we wanted the prop, what's his name, the massive prop from Claremont to go in?
Zirakashvili.
that's like my number one choice. Any of the Georgians.
I want Camille Schatt to go on Love Island.
Neck.
Get that neck on Love Island.
And the final bit of news before we finally get onto Champions Cup, which is a nice lead into Champions Cup. So Racing 92 have got some player management issues. So there's two things. Ben Tamifuna... He's been told he's too fat to play. He's got to lose 20 kilos before he's in condition to play in the top 14.
We've all been there.
And the other one, I don't know if there's been any developments over the weekend on this, but as of the mid to the end of last week, Leone Nakarawa was in Fiji and uncontactable.
Mm.
So he should have reported for training at least a couple of weeks ago. He is... probably one of the highest paid players in the world because he's one of the most talented players in the world.
I'm not sure he is that highly paid. Well, didn't he leave Glasgow to get a big deal and never really got one, then ended up there? He'll be fine.
He left Glasgow for Racing.
He was unattached.
What?
Yeah, he was unattached.
Nakarawa?
Yep, have a look. He left Glasgow, couldn't get a deal, and finally landed with...
Rubbish. I couldn't get a deal. It might well be that he voluntarily went on the... There's no way that he went, please, someone give me a contract. No,
unattached.
I'm not giving you a contract.
He was unattached.
Rubbish. He may well have been unattached. He might have gone and thought, shall I play some sevens? Shall I go back to Fiji for a bit? Shall I chill out? There's no way.
Shall I chill out?
He's doing it now.
Yes, fair. That's very, very fair.
The only Google posts with Leone Nakarawa unattached refer to the 2011 World Cup when he was in the same Fiji team as Nicky Little, who was unattached.
Oh, right. Okay. I mean, if you want to trust Google over me, be it on your head. I know which way I would go. Any other news?
No. That's it.
So Europe this weekend.
All the games are on BT Sport. And you'll be at some of the games, right?
I'm there on Friday night for the big
and
one
so
as
is,
it opens up.
And so is Phil.
You're there?
Not Friday night.
You're at Kingzone? No.
I'm at Scotstoun.
Is that not Friday night?
No, it's Saturday.
Oh.
But yeah. Hey, Saturday listen, early there is just scores to keep an eye on as well. The first game of the weekend is actually at 11 a.m. in Yenisei STM wherever that is.
NSI.
Is it NSI?
It's NSI. Is it in Russia?
NSI STM.
That is NSI.
Yep.
Yeah. Because it's in, quite far east Russia.
Yeah, so NSI...
Siberia.
Yeah, NSI are the ones where I think AJ McGinty made his debut there.
In minus 35 degrees.
It's one of the best rugby stories I've ever heard, actually. And I didn't even hear it from AJ McGinty. I heard it from the guys who run the Craggy Island podcast for Connacht Rugby. And it is magnificent. Minus 30. They have to commit to play one game at home.
So, anyway, the Challenge Cup, our message to those sides is good luck in your games, be better, and you'll get more coverage on podcasts like ours.
By the way, will we be covering Saracens in the Challenge Cup next year? Because they were better, but they'll still be there.
Well,
there's an interesting point.
Be better or
don't cheat.
Yes.
Be better things, or don't cheat.
Above board. Fine.
Those things. So, Friday night, first game in Pool 5, Gloucester host Toulouse.
So I checked up on the Toulouse situation today. They are mid-table. Unsurprisingly, the top 14 is in complete flux. So my prediction is Toulouse might be very good or very bad, and Gloucester might be very good or very bad, and one of these teams will win on Friday night, providing that there's not a draw.
Toulouse do now at least have the spine of the French team back, which will make a
which
difference.
Could be very good or very bad.
Did you see the Romain Entomac try?
No, was it amazing?
Little chip over, and then
lovely.
Feet were sensational. Yeah,
I'll help you out with the second fixture, Sale to win away at Glasgow.
Well, that is
100%.
That is in Pool 2.
I think Faf is back too.
Big game. Yep. Faf will still be drying out.
He's a very sensible professional. He'll be ready to go if required.
if required. Don't need him. Papier,
yeah.
I'm quite looking forward to that.
An interesting one to call.
If anyone's at that game, come and say hello.
Yeah.
What do you reckon, Phil? As you'll go in, you'll have taken more of an interest. Well, no, actually, you'll have taken more of a closer interest in it than me, but not of JB, obviously.
Well, I've been a large fan of Glasgow. I've been to watch Glasgow training. Yeah. I've been to visit them. Yeah, I will be taking a strong interest in how Glasgow get on this year.
Against your team.
Give me Glasgow at home.
Yeah, I'm minded to edge for Glasgow.
There's a lot of Scottish players who've got some wrongs to right this season. They want to make a real go at that. And Glasgow are a good team.
Yeah, they are a good team, but they won't be good enough. And there again, do you remember when we thought that Leicester Tigers, I mean, this was on the start of the decline, but when we thought Leicester Tigers would get up there and spank Glasgow and got absolutely annihilated. So, yeah, they are good. I say Sale, but it won't be easy.
The other lunchtime game in Pool 3, and this is the other one I'm working at this weekend. I'm very much looking forward to Bath against Ulster.
They've really congested your travel down for you, concentrated it down.
Well, it's Gloucester and
perfect that,
and Bath.
It?
Yeah, I mean it's a late finish and a relatively early start. Relative.
Yeah.
I'm not down the pit.
Yeah. That's such a hard job, Tim. How'd you do it?
Well, it's hard in other ways, JB.
They could have sent you to Connacht and NSI.
Yeah.
Connacht on Friday night, NSI Saturday.
Yeah,
early kick-off.
That's what you deserve, Tim.
But here's a thought. If I were looking for a DOR for an English club, Dan McFarland might be a guy that I would hand the keys to.
A fantastic shout.
Yes, agreed.
So,
Yeah, watch this space.
What's this space for him?
Any struggling clubs, mentioning no names because we've mentioned them lots of times already.
Yep.
Yes.
Although Ulster had a disappointing loss to Munster. Let's not talk about
it. Yeah, it's frustrating.
There are other podcasts to deal with.
Away at Munster is unsurprising.
We'll have to do a job there. How many of their internationals will they have back for that one? It'll have been
two weeks since
the World Cup final.
Yeah, Jonathan Joseph will play.
Well, Jonathan Joseph's around. Cocker Singh will be around. McConaughey will be around. Yeah. Watson will be around.
Watson might not play. He took some heavy hits.
But you only need like three of
them. But you've got McConaughey and Cocker Singh.
Yeah.
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 Nice.
Underhill, probably not.
That's a different sort of ask, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the toll that his body took.
Who else?
Francois Lowe, yeah.
Crikey. Yeah. There's some big upgrades to come for Bath.
Yeah.
Yeah,
good news. That's Bath.
I don't know.
So I'll go for Bath at home.
Problem is, their fly halves just aren't very good. I mean, it is a massive problem.
But
we might have some Burns action here.
Oh yeah.
Burns on Burns action. That's the whole storyline pre-show. I'm having that.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Cheers, mate.
I mean, when I got round to doing my research, that would have been obviously top of the list. I just haven't done it. I just haven't done it yet.
There's two Burns playing. I wonder if they're related.
Yeah. First degree Burns. Yeah, like that. La Rochelle, Exeter? I'm sorry, have we said that Bath are going to beat Ulster?
I think Bath will win.
Fine,
yeah.
Done.
Yeah. La Rochelle,
back
Exeter,
in pool two.
That is not an easy place for Exeter to go. But they've got the good narrative from Baxter for this.
I'd love to be
week.
Going be there, though. Game. That's yeah. one of my favourite stadiums yeah. to go and watch a game at. It's brilliant.
Oh, that sales group as well.
Yeah, pool two. Glasgow, sorry, Sale, Glasgow's La Rochelle, group. Exeter.
I don't know. I don't know. Exeter have a nasty habit of not doing well in Europe. La Rochelle's hard. Give me La Rochelle.
Yes, I tend to agree with that.
I think La Rochelle at home.
La Rochelle led by Ruan Agora.
I think home
and
wins.
Vito.
Well, away wins are priceless in Champions Cup. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, give me La Rochelle.
For everything else, there's joint investment companies.
So that's pool two taken care of. Pool three, Bathfield Ulster, we mentioned. The other one is Claremont Quins, a replay of the semi-final in the Challenge Cup. Yeah, last year.
Good luck.
And Claremont will win as they did in that semi-final.
So the question is, how much will Claremont win by?
15 points.
15 points?
Minimum.
Minimum. Give me 20 points minimum.
Oh, these French stadiums are so... Even if you're not a fan of Quins or Exeter or whatever, just, if you can go to one of them, just go. They're so much fun.
Have you called the Leinster Treviso game?
No, I was just doing the chalking off pool three.
Okay, I see.
The other pool one game, Leinster Benetton.
Benetton, obviously.
Yeah. Benetton have done it before.
And they'll do it again.
I think this might be Leinster. Leinster with all their boys back.
What about Treviso with all their boys back?
All their boys back, yeah.
I have to say that the All-Pro 14 games...
Dynamite.
...feel much less glamorous, don't they?
I don't know why you'd say that.
Leinster Benetton and Ospreys Munster.
Ospreys Munster, crikey.
I mean, that should... Ospreys Munster, in the traditions of the Cup, when you think back to some of the players and some of the teams, that should be a dynamite game, but...
just isn't, is it?
No, it's not.
Give me Munster and Leinster.
Agreed. And then on to Sunday, and we just mentioned Leinster and Benetton. In pool one, they are with Northampton and Lyon. We go head to head.
Good test.
Come on, Lyon.
Good test.
Come on, Lyon. You
well,
can
yeah,
do it.
Particularly with their... They're going to need to spend a lot of time on the scrummaging machine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Damn right they are.
I'm trying to think, was the other Franks? Frinks?
Owen Franks.
He hasn't played yet.
Is in the country. Is... So that he was available for selection this weekend, just gone. So yeah. I think he will play.
Yeah, it's also highly, highly likely that for Lyon we will be seeing Matthew Bastereau packed down at 8. He's been doing it pretty regularly for the first half of almost every game.
When does he go to New York?
Not before Saturday, unfortunately, for Connacht. is it Connacht they're playing? No, sorry, Northampton.
Northampton.
Yeah. These guys are genuinely, genuinely very good now. Like, their pack is more than solid. They've got lads like Demba Bamba, Xavier Troque.
They're comfortably top of the top 14.
Yeah.
And with in nine games, a plus 165 point difference.
Yeah, like, Tua Sova plays there now. It's just ridiculous. They've got a ridiculously good team.
That'll be a proper test for them.
It will. That's a really big test.
Yeah, because they're going to have to front up big time.
I think they'll win because it's at home.
I think you're probably right.
I don't know. The pack.
The pack is massive. And Lyon, after getting their record-breaking debut season...
It's the pack. That's in the balance, that one.
It's the pack.
Lyon will surprise you.
Yes, they always do.
Will Bigger be back? You've got World Cup players, Courtney Laws and...
the other guy, Ludlam.
Ludlam.
Yeah, and Piers Francis.
And Bigger and Piers Francis.
Piers Francis, thank God.
Maybe Northampton should pack Nairavoro down at 8 against Bastereau. That'd be good. Anyway, the big game on Sunday, Racing 92 against Saracens.
In the, Defence Arena?
La Defense
Arena.
Not only is it the coolest looking, it's the coolest named.
It is.
It's just the coolest club, isn't it? And they've got Turmoil, which makes them even cooler.
Turmoil versus Turmoil. Which Turmoil would you prefer?
Saracens, any day of the week. It's not as exciting, is it? I mean, Saracens should lose. Saracens should do a lot of things. I just don't see Saracens losing again for a long, long time. Give me Saracens.
Saracens, it'll be interesting to see how many of their England stars do play.
I think they go for Cruis.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's hard to say with the others because they've got so many minutes and their belts already.
Singleton might come off the bench again.
Yes, Singleton.
They probably won't play the Vunipolas.
Yeah.
Or Cock.
Or Murrow.
Maybe Cock. Maybe Cock. Who's a bench
Figolo.
Player.
Figolo should play.
Reese Kerr.
Lama Satelli has been playing.
It's only when you start listing off the players that you... Yeah.
They'll be all right.
Liam Williams is probably injured.
That's the tight one.
Liam Williams might be missing Six Nations.
That bad?
No, he might not be back until Six Nations.
I thought missing Six Nations.
Mm. Possibly touch and go.
Okay.
But anyway.
Give me Racing at home.
Give me Saracens away.
Probably Racing just. And pool five, Connacht, Montpellier.
Montpellier?
Give me Connacht. Connacht at home. It's a horrible place to go to.
Montpellier.
As an away player. Lovely place to go to if you're
and
a fan.
And that is the Champions Cup. And that is a podcast. A bloody marathon podcast. Jesus.
Quick note, if anyone is still listening, if you want the excitement of Fantasy Rugby Draft and the excitement of Heineken Cup Rugby, you can combine both.
What? How?
There is Fantasy Rugby Draft specifically for the Heineken Cup. So it's not as laborious as, laborious is the wrong word, not as totally draining of all your time and all your senses and all of your thoughts on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday as the regular game.
Yeah, you don't have to neglect
every week.
Exactly.
What's really good about Fantasy Rugby Draft is when you're at work and you're doing it, it looks like kind of like a spreadsheet.
It does, doesn't it? The other thing that is good is it's always 12 o'clock on a Friday. So if you're really into it, like I am this year because I'm undefeated. Have I mentioned I'm undefeated?
Who's got an alarm set on their phone for like 11:55 a.m. on a Friday?
Who's got all of the Twitter alerts ready? So when the teams announce they also flash up.
What you mean? Who's got a list?
It might be that.
A list in Twitter. No comment as to whether I have one.
Yeah, I don't know if I have one either. But I arrange where I'm going to be, so I might treat myself to a nice Italian, so I can sit there with my big iPad and my phone, ready to go, ready to trade. And it's paying dividends. You know, I've got many players from across the league in all different teams, and it's because I know everything about every team, which I managed to be great at fantasy rugby.
You are feast or famine. You're doing really well after dreadfully. And what's different actually is the
same strategy as every year, Tim.
Same strategy as every year. Yeah, you're right. Just one in three. One in three is a better hit rate than I've had. I've got the playoffs twice, but not a sausage.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
And on that note, the guy that's won our league twice, Bryn Williams, scored 9.9.
That's incredible.
This week.
That is with
a legit, he put out players in every position. None of them got double points. No, double figures, sorry. None of them achieved double figures. The closest to double figures was Paolo Odogwu, who scored -8.9.
Well done.
Well done, Bruno.
What a great way to end a wonderful podcast. Well done, everyone.
Right, you know where to find us. You know what to do. Let the boys play.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.